What if the secret to a lifelong love of your sport wasn't just in how you train your body? What joy, possibility, and performance could be unlocked through the power of mental fitness? Well, you're about to find out. Welcome to the MindFit Athlete Podcast. If you want to figure out what's holding you back, then you're in the right place. Now, here's your host, John Ray.
This is the noise from the inside of an MRI machine. It's a little scary, which seems right given the potential consequences of its work. By contrast, there is a specific kind of silence that happens later in the consultant's office. It's not so much the absence of noise. It's the heavy threat of a life about to change. A week later, I was looking at a screen. Grey, black and white. To most people, it's just a picture of anatomy. To someone who has spent 20 years defining himself through his ability to move, it was much more like a map. A map of a territory I was no longer allowed to enter. "Advanced arthritis," he said. "Reflect and adjust." In that second, my brain didn't see an MRI. It saw a cruel blow. It saw the end of an identity. It saw a future that was broken. But what if that diagnosis wasn't a tragedy? What if it was just, well, maths? What if bone on bone isn't a disaster, but simply the perfect playing out of a decades-long equation? Today, we're talking about the perfect outcome. We're exploring why your brain would rather be a victim than be sane, and how just functioning might be the most high-performance move you'll ever make.
We're looking at the metabolic cost of your stories.
And the radical piece of simply accepting what is.
Today, we're dedicating this episode of the MindFit Athlete Podcast to the memory of Chris Hempelman.
I'm John, and I'm delighted to be back with you. Today's episode is, well, personal. A few weeks back, I sat in a consultant's office staring at the images from an MRI scan of both of my knees. If you're an endurance athlete, you can imagine the dread of that moment. The consultant pointed to the white space on the screen, or the lack of it, and said the words, "Advanced arthritis." This knee discomfort showed up a few weeks before the Lakesman Middle Distance Championships, and I just tried to power through it. Anyway, the consultant was really direct. He told me to reflect and adjust my behaviour. There are no trap doors or parachutes out of this. No surgery will help, and injections were not something he could recommend. In plain English, the way I've related to this sport for 20 years is over. I have to admit, as a positive intelligence coach, my first reaction wasn't sage-like. It was a total saboteur hijack. My judge was screaming, "This is the end. This is unfair. My body has let me down. What the hell do I do from here?" So, maybe you have noticed a gap in our podcasts, and that's on me, not my two amazing co-hosts. If you've been wondering where we've been, the honest answer is, I've been drifting. I've been silent because, frankly, I lost my sparkle. I've been carrying a weight that I didn't know how to put into words until now. I haven't been training and could not even bring myself to look at my own Training Peaks dashboard. The CTL index I had taken so much pride in building now would now be in freefall. It seems that, just like that, the door to the old John, the guy who could grind out long miles, the guy who was championship ready, the guy who found his identity in the endurance world, it felt like that door slammed shut. I think it's fair to say that I went through a time of genuine grief. I had to say goodbye to that version of myself. And in that silence, a question kept me from reconnecting with Emily and Scott. If I'm not in the endurance world, how can I have credibility with the audience? I thought, if I can't run the 70.3s, if I can't chase the splits, if I'm not in the game, do I still have the right to coach? Do I still have a voice? But then I realized something, and this is the heart of what I want to share today. Do you download this podcast just to hear about podiums and perfect training blocks, or do you tune in to learn how to navigate the messy, hard, beautiful reality of being human? I realized that credibility isn't about invincibility. A coach who has never been injured, never been scared, and never faced the void is a coach who cannot truly empathize with you. So, where are we now? Well, I think I'm in a new phase I'm calling discovery, but more on that later. Right now, I want to explore a concept that sounds almost offensive when you're in pain, the idea that this diagnosis is perfect.
Thank you for being so open, John. I can see how it's been a tough few months. Can you say more about what you mean about being perfect?
Sure. In coaching, we often use that tactic with clients, don't we? They might have had a really bad experience at work or in a race. We rock back and ask, what's perfect about that? Now, I wouldn't be so callous as to say it about a death, but I have asked that question with someone who was being fired.
Yes, it's really the nuclear question, isn't it? Kind of explosive?
I think it's a device coaches use to shock the client into reflecting that there might actually be something good in what seems to them to be a hopeless situation.
Right, it's a bit like the question, what would love do in this situation? The question creates the opportunity for a radical reframe.
Its power seems to be in its apparent insensitivity. It certainly stops you dead in your tracks.
Yes, but when a saboteur hijacking so deep it's like being stuck down a well, there's seemingly no way out. And this question often throws down a ladder, or at least a torch. I like it as it immediately launches the brain into its superpower of creative problem solving. Give me three things that might be good about that. It's another way to access that creativity.
For the listener, I just want to say that the coach will have established such a safe, loving, and supportive space with the client that it makes asking these hugely challenging questions possible. You can really only ask such questions when a high level of trust exists between client and coach.
Can I just go back a step for a moment, John, and say, it's great to be here and back with you and Emily. And I want to acknowledge the courage it takes to share your story, John. In PQ terms, your judge has been having a field day. It's using the MRI as a weapon to prove that your future is diminished, limited, and less. But I suggest we look at the sage perspective, the idea that every circumstance can be turned into a gift or opportunity.
And I'd go even deeper, John. Beyond gift or opportunity. There are some teachers like Pema Chodron or Byron Katie who wouldn't necessarily call it a gift. They would simply say, it is. And because it is perfect.
See, that's where I struggle, Emily. Perfect to me usually means a sunrise, a newborn grandchild, a freshly opened flower. Just the right word said at just the right moment, something beautiful. How can bone-on-bone arthritis be perfect?
We have to strip the word perfect of its emotional baggage. Perfect has more than one aspect. As coaches, we are using a specific, almost technical definition of the word. We do not mean morally good, pleasing, just, or beautiful. We don't mean pleasant. If you stick to the dictionary definition or the emotional definition of perfect, meaning ideal or flawless, this coaching will incense you and drive you nuts. We mean it in the sense of a sequence of events or a logical equation. Think of the precision-made and exquisitely choreographed components of a Swiss watch or the example of a maths equation. 2 plus 2 equals 4. 2 plus 2 is never 3 and it's never 5. It is perfectly 4. The skill of the craftsman and quality engineering of the watch leads to it keeping perfect time.
It seems to me that that's seeing perfect in a mechanistic or cause and effect sense.
That's right, that's exactly it. John, think about your knees. Decades of training, your choices of events, your aspiration for performance, your shoe choices, the terrain you trained over, the genetics your mom and dad gave you, the specific mechanics of your stride, your strength and conditioning choices, the aging process, all of these are the inputs. The output is the current state of your cartilage. For your knees not to be arthritic right now, given all those inputs, would be a mathematical impossibility. The universe would have to be broken for 2 plus 2 to equal 5. That's how the state of your knees right now are perfect.
It's a powerful realization. When you say it shouldn't be this way, you're essentially arguing with the maths. You are arguing with what is. And as Byron Katie famously says, when you argue with reality, you lose, but only 100% of the time.
So 2 plus 2 equals 4. The arthritic condition is the 4. If I accept that it's mathematically or logically inevitable, I feel a slight relief. But it feels cold. It feels like I'm just a machine running some code.
Be careful with the inevitability. Your knee condition wasn't predestined.
You mean if John had changed the inputs to his equation, he'd also have changed the outputs?
Yes, exactly. So for example, if John's running had been more recreational than performance-focused, he might have delayed or changed the progression of his condition.
But the outcome, whatever it is still perfectly matched to the inputs.
Right. You must have heard the phrase that the system is perfectly designed for the results it creates. If you want different results, then change the system that produces those results.
So if a person wants to run a sub-4-hour marathon and yet has never done so, then you are saying that the training they have undertaken was perfectly designed to create a 4-hour, 10-minute result.
In part, it's not just the training, is it? The system would include the weather on the day, their mental attitude, the stress in the rest of their lives, the whole ecology of it. But all other things being equal, I'd say that person should at least explore a different way of training. John said it feels cold or clinical. It might well seem cold until you realize that the suffering isn't caused by the arthritis. The suffering is caused by what Joko Beck calls the extra.
That's a great catch, Emily. There is the circumstance, and then there is our reaction to the circumstance.
Right. There is the event, the reality of your knee condition, the bone-on-bone sensation, a more limited range of motion. That's our 2 plus 2 equals 4. Then there is the label. I am old. I am a failure. Life is cruel. My life is over. This is our story about the event. The event is objective reality. Like Scott says, it's a neutral circumstance. This label oftentimes is our subjective saboteur. When we say life is perfect, we are looking at the raw event before you slap the judgment on it.
Okay, this is exactly what we mean by circumstances being neutral. Your knees are just as they should be. It's not objectively good or bad, it's just what happens when Emily's list of contributing inputs plays out.
I think I get this now. When I get triggered by that word perfect, the triggering is what is really helping me most. It's like life shouting back, hey, of course this is how it is. Given everything that went before, how could it be otherwise?
Yes. And if you want things to be otherwise, look at the components of the equation. Maybe it will be possible for you to change some of them.
I want to look more at this word cruel. Emily said it just now. Life is cruel. When I got the diagnosis, a friend said to me, John, that's such a cruel thing to happen.
It is a common thing for people to say. And if we don't say it, I'm guessing we're thinking it.
Yeah, but given our discussion so far, it's starting to feel odd. I think if I decide life is cruel, it somehow takes the pressure off me. After all, if life did it to me, then it wasn't my fault, right?
For me, it seems we often use that phrase when we're thinking about extreme events like floods, famines, wars, or even terrorism.
But given what we've just talked about, is life actually capable of being cruel?
That's a great question. From a PQ perspective, the word cruel is the calling card of the victim saboteur. The moment you label the universe as cruel, you have effectively resigned. You've handed over your power to a phantom. Cruelty requires intent. It implies the universe went out of its way to hurt you. But as we discussed with the maths of your MRI, life isn't intentional. It's neutral. It's just 2 plus 2 playing out. There is zero intrinsic cruelty in a rain cloud, a cell, or a joint.
I think this is where Byron Katie's work is so insightful. If you ask yourself, who would I be without the thought that life is cruel? What happens, John?
I guess I feel lighter. I am less resentful. I'm probably calmer and more grounded too. Also, if I don't buy into the cruel life lie, then I'm far more likely to look deeply into what really is driving those events.
So if it's not just a spiteful or cruel world at work, then maybe it's climate change leading to more floods?
Good example. If life isn't cruel, then it's just a set of conditions. And if it's a set of conditions, I can work with them. I move from what's the point of doing anything to the activate sage step, what's needed now.
Exactly. Life is cruel is a paralyzing thought. It keeps you in the survival brain, where you're just trying to hide from the risk of yet more life-created pain. But when you drop that story, you can immediately activate the sage power of innovate. You can move from the dead end of I can't run to the expansive creative space of what else is possible.
That's exactly right. It unlocks your innate creativity. You realize that while you can't change the 2 + 2 = 4 of the arthritis, you do have infinite ways to innovate the next equation of your life. It's a massive energy shift. The cruelty story is an energy sink. It burns metabolic fuel on resentment. Dropping that story is like finding a hidden battery. Suddenly you are energized to innovate and activate. You aren't a victim of a cruel fate. You are a participant in a neutral process. So if climate change is driving flooding, I might ask, what's my role in that? And what can I do to shift the equation?
Maybe Joko Beck would say, life isn't doing anything to you. Life is just doing life. When you stop taking the universe's neutrality personally, you finally become free to actually live.
Free to live, and free to make better choices. And from a neuroscience perspective, John, that extra, that labeling of the circumstance as cruel or a disaster, is incredibly expensive for your body budget.
Wait, Scott, help me out here. You've previously said the judge is the brain's shortcut. Usually a shortcut saves energy. Why is it an energy leak?
You're right. Initially, the judge is a predictive shortcut. Following the work of neuroscientist Lisa Feldman Barrett, we know the brain is a prediction engine. It's metabolically cheap for your brain to grab a pre-packaged prediction, like life is cruel, because it's based on past patterns. The brain defaults to this survival brain mode because it doesn't want to spend the energy required to process the actual, complex data of your MRI in real time.
Okay, so it's all too easy to start the story, especially as saboteurs are our default autopilot mode. But what's the long-term cost?
The operating cost is where you go bankrupt. Once that life is cruel prediction is locked in, your survival brain keeps your entire system in a state of high alert prediction. Because of what is called degeneracy, your brain can use many different neural pathways to keep this stress response alive. It's not just one spot in the brain, it's a whole system threat loop. You are effectively simulating a catastrophe 24/7. This keeps your heart rate high and your muscles tensed for a fight that isn't happening. It's like leaving the engine of your car redlining in the driveway while you're inside trying to sleep. You aren't going anywhere, but you're burning through your fuel tank.
So the consequence of buying into the life is cruel story is a never-ending saboteur vigilance that drains my energy. My brain keeps trying to solve a threat that is actually just a neutral reality?
Exactly, John. And this is where Byron Katie's 4 questions act as the ultimate budget management tool. When you ask, who would I be without the thought that this is cruel? You are breaking that predictive loop. You are telling the brain, stop. This prediction is no longer useful. Without that thought, you are just a man sitting in a chair with knees that have changed. The extra is gone. The energy leak is plugged.
And that is when you finally have the fuel available to move into sage mode. For example, choosing innovate, asking what else is possible, requires a deliberate surge of energy to your prefrontal cortex. It's a heavy lift at first, but because you've stopped the survival brain leak, you finally have the metabolic budget to get creative. When you choose a sage skill, you stop fighting the logical, unfolding maths of the universe. You move away from the friction of should towards the peace of is.
That's actually why many people are attracted to Zen meditation. We're trying to stop the leak. When you stop arguing with the fact that your knees hurt, you suddenly have the fuel available to actually do what the consultant suggested, reflect and adjust.
Well, thank you both for that. Let's take a break. My colleague Chris loved Alice Cooper and saw him perform live many times. This 2-minute break with a beat of 148 is for you, Chris. Welcome back. I hope you all could catch the shock rock goth vibe in that track. We will miss you, Chris. Okay, so back to our topic. I can certainly concede the perfection of the maths and the need to view the event as neutral. And I can see the energetic trap of judging the event as bad and labelling it cruel world. But then what? There's a gap. If I just accept what is and acknowledge that it's perfect, do I just sit on the couch and let my legs atrophy? I think if I asked Byron Katie what happens now, she'd smile, lean over and say, "Well, sweetheart, that's your work."
Yes, she would. I can just hear her say that. It was her job to bring you to reality, and it's your job to figure out what to do with it.
I think that's not quite all, though. Both Joko and Katie would expect that knowing what to do next would simply arise. It would become obvious.
Okay, but that sounds a little passive. How long could I be waiting? I'm an athlete. I need a plan.
And you want it now, right?
Okay, so I think this is where positive intelligence can help bridge the gap. Byron Katie's work cleans the windscreen. But positive intelligence tells you where to drive. First, there's the comfort and reassurance of the sage perspective, knowing that any circumstance can be turned into a gift and opportunity.
Yes, I think that's fair, Scott. And I'd suggest that positive intelligence would advocate a spacious, unpressured, unrushed connection with our intuition. We don't need to force it or speed anything up.
Thank you for slowing me down. That's right. In John's situation, that spaciousness would definitely be in order. Anyone facing a change of magnitude would do well to gift themselves time, so it's important not to think of these steps as transactional. Just consciously seed your mind with the questions and keep asking until the answer arises.
That generous act of giving yourself time and space is surely empathy for self, right?
It would be. Just be gentle and compassionate. It's like you said right at the beginning of the episode. For many situations, this space offers an opportunity for grieving and needs its own time to heal.
I don't think we have ever spoken to our audience about grief, but for us, grief is not a negative emotion.
That's right. And when we think of grief, we're talking all forms of loss. For example, the loss of a lifestyle or a self-image.
For me, the best way to think about grief is Elizabeth David's definition, that grief is love looking for a home.
Certainly grief seems uncomfortable, but it's also a very human, natural, and beautiful thing. As athletes, we have a real-life skill advantage here. We're used to this idea of discomfort having the potential to be good for us. Anyway, back to the spaciousness. The important thing, I think, is to keep the question in mind. For you, John, this might be, what does this situation make possible?
Or what do I now want my relationship with triathlon to be?
You know, now that you've pointed this out, I see that I have kind of crossed over into that self-pity victim mindset. I think I spent longer than I needed to in that space. And if I'd more consciously asked those questions each day, I think I'd have moved through this quicker. I should have asked one of you to coach me.
No shoulds, John.
Right, this is a should-free podcast.
So, when we are ready to prime our intuition, then the sage skills are a perfect framework.
Okay, let's work up some examples. Empathy for self. Well, that could be checking in to see if you are actually ready to move on, or it's still too raw and you need more time.
Empathy for others. That could be our audience. What's happening for them when we're not there for them? It could be that you now have a far greater understanding of the impact of injury or retirement for the lifetime athlete.
Explore. Explore has so many things to offer, but top of my list is, well, if you can't do high mileage running, what can you do? What is still possible for you? Do you actually know that?
Or there's technique. Is there a stride length of foot strike position that makes things less impactful? And technology, do you know what shoe design can do for you? I think exploring what assumptions you are making about your future is a great start.
Navigate. Well, this one is perfect. 10 years from now, looking back at this situation, what meaning do you want it to have?
Boom, that's brilliant. That's a day's reflection right there. Innovate. Work with your coach or even us and play the yes and game. Really spend time on this and be outrageous. Remember, it must be fun.
And after you do some or part of this, taking action. The sage step for activate is what's needed now, and what might be needed is more time.
Yes, that's true. And I'd add that placing a scheduled time to revisit the situation would be very helpful in stopping the drift. You can decide you need more time, but that's coming from a position of sage empathy rather than saboteur-avoider. That's certainly a lesson for me.
I love what we have covered here, and I agree that, when the time is right, the sage skills offer a powerful, constructive, and positive framework to move forward. But I'd also offer a sharp edge to watch for. John, don't let innovate or activate become a way to escape the current pain.
What's that, Emily? I don't follow.
We've talked about the creating the gift, i.e. the sage perspective, without giving it its proper context. The PQ step is actually called accept or convert.
Yes, that's right. That really matters. We have hinted at this in our take the time you need, but actually PQ makes it explicit.
There is a time to accept and a time to convert, if you want to. It would be so wrong to see this like, oh, I got fired today, so now I've got to create a gift. When you choose the accept path, you are saying, this is what is. The generative part, finding the gift, is completely optional, and it should only happen if and when the system is actually ready for it.
In fact, I would say that if you rush to innovate or activate while your survival brain is still screaming, life is cruel, you're just putting a sage mask on a saboteur.
Right. If you rush to create the gift, then it's your hyperachiever who wants to win at having a gift. I want to be crystal clear here. In PQ, you cannot convert what you have not first accepted.
That's so true.
Notice that when you are driven by the hyperachiever, the action is about you. It's about your image, your progress, your win. When you are simply functioning, the action is about the situation. The knees need less impact, so the body moves to the pool. There is no John in the middle of that equation, trying to make it look good for a podcast or a training log. The action arises naturally from the requirement of the moment.
Emily, thank you for saying that, because you've stumbled into the most common trap for high achievers. They don't take the time to accept and are trying to convert before they've even arrived.
In Zen, we say that once the war with reality ends, functioning begins, and functioning is the greatest gift there is. John, you don't need to be the poster child for arthritis. You just need to be a man who knows how to swim when he can no longer run. That is the perfect outcome. It's not a miraculous healing of the cartilage. It's the healing of your relationship with reality.
Thank you, Emily. So what do we think is the relationship between grieving and PQ's accept?
I think when you grieve, the judge often shows up to say, you should be stronger. Or the avoider says, let's just focus on training so we don't have to feel this. Acceptance is the act of saying, I'm feeling deep pain right now. This is the reality of my internal world.
By accepting the grief, you stop the dirty pain, the saboteur's commentary, and stay with the clean pain, the actual loss. This creates the necessary spaciousness we talked about earlier. Healing happens in that space. Without acceptance, we are in a mental war with reality, which drains the energy you need for healing.
The practice would be to use PQ reps to stay present with the physical sensation of grief. Instead of spinning in circles of, why me, poor me, you drop into the body. You feel the weight in your chest or the sting in your eyes.
You exercise self-command.
Right, and in that space you aren't trying to fix the grief. You are simply holding it. This is really the sage power of empathy applied to the self. It is the most generous thing an athlete can do for themselves, to stop demanding they be back to peak performance before they have actually processed the loss.
So, to everyone listening out there who might be staring at their own MRI, or facing a business failure, or a broken down relationship, or where life has come unexpectedly crashing onto your plans, this is our invitation.
First, check the maths. Look at your situation and strip away the extra. Stop the story that life is cruel and realize it's just 2 + 2 = 4.
Remember that acceptance is a high performance move. You don't have to innovate or activate a silver lining today or ever. You are allowed to take the space you need. Simply breathe into the peace of is.
Know that you are open to saboteur hijack and apply the PQ technique of dropping into your body and focusing on the physical sensation of the grief. As often as you need, for as long as it takes.
Once it seems like the internal war stops, don't ask, how do I win? Ask, what's needed now? Just know that you have the power to create a gift from any circumstance, and that the five sage powers are all waiting for you when the moment is right.
I want to finish with a Byron Katie quote. She said, "I am a lover of what is, not because I'm a spiritual person, but because it hurts when I argue with reality."
Well, thank you both so much for today. You have very much helped with my discovery phase. I don't know if I'll ever pin on a race number again, but I know that in this moment I feel very blessed to be a part of this team. This episode is specially for Chris. And it's for anyone out there hurting with an unexpected and unwelcome reality. I really hope it has helped.
And anyone in that position should know they are never alone. This is the human condition we all share.
Thank you for being part of our podcast today. I've been John.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Scott.
In his famous Stanford graduation address, Steve Jobs said, "Live each day as if it is your last. Someday, you will be right." I'd like to paraphrase that. Enjoy each run as if it is your last. Someday, you will be right. So, today don't zone out on your run, zone in. PQ rep like crazy on all the rich visuals that come your way, and the amazing physical sensations of your body as it moves you. Each run is a blessing, a gift. Experience it fully.
And when it is that last run, just remember that this is life unfolding, exactly as it should. Perfectly.
Thank you for tuning in to the Mind Fit Athlete podcast. If you've enjoyed today's material and you'd like to dive deeper, our Mind Fit Athlete community is waiting for you over at mindfitathlete.com. That's where we take these insights and integrate them into our everyday lives. In fact, we're on a mission to help everyone build their mental fitness so they can choose happiness, thrive, and make a positive difference. We are building our mental fitness in sport and in life, and we'd absolutely love to have you join us.